Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. And I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addis, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Monday, November 9th, 2015. Good afternoon, Al.
Hi, Melody.
It was a typical Monday as far as the markets are going. You know, gold was up much more in early morning trade, but still managed to be up at the moment in the aftermarket trade, 180 at 1,092. You have silver down 17 cents at 1,467. Platinum down big, 28 at 917. Palladium was also down big, down 22 at 603. The USDX today down 0.16 at 98.99, and crude oil was down 0.28, 44.01. And the paper markets today, you had the Dow was down most of the day, and actually it's been their biggest decline in 6 weeks, and everybody is fretting about the interest rate hike and China's trade data, how weak it is. You had 9 out of 10 of the major S&P sectors were lower, and of course that was led by consumer discretionary and energy stocks. And let's go ahead and get to those market prices as long as my computer brings it up. The Dow came back a little bit, down 1%, 178. 17,731. The NASDAQ was also, they were all down about 1%. 51 points for the NASDAQ at 5,095. 20 points for the S&P at 2,078. 10-year yield climbed to 0.01 at 2.34. Euro was, of course, stronger with the dollar weaker, 0.13 at 108. And overnight markets, you know, Germany was down 1.5%. Japan was up 2%. Other than that, there was no real excitement there. I didn't see what Japan did. I'll see if I can't look that up here in just a little bit. But I figured they might have been a little bit weaker, as, again, China's, you know, everyone is concerned about the slowdown in China, and which is a key market for a lot of companies. And the report talks about the crucial holiday shopping season. Well, I would think most of your companies would already have a lot of their inventory in. I would think that most of that would already been purchased, considering we're almost in the middle of November. So we'll see how that works out. China took another step to boost the yuan's global usage, saying it's going to start direct trading with the Swiss franc. And we see China is continuing to push its case for the reserve currency status at the IMF. This link to the Swiss franc will begin tomorrow, and the China Foreign Exchange Trade System said today, making the franc the seventh major currency that can bypass the conversion into the U.S. dollar and be directly exchanged for the yuan. And, you know, it's just another step. It's just another sign that this announcement, the IMF prepares to meet this month to review its special drawing rights. We know China dutifully wants to be involved in that. And the People's Bank of China this year extended to Switzerland a 50 billion yuan quota under the Renminbi Qualified Foreign Institutional Investor Program. And it just goes on and on. But you have this deal going on between the Swiss and the Chinese central banks, and they signed a three-year deal. So, again, it's just another sign that China is trying to impress the IMF and trying to do what the IMF wants in order to get involved with the other major currencies. So an interesting step, I believe. And, you know, I'm not so sure we'll see an immediate impact on things, but certainly will, I think, in the near future.
You know, the thing about China that really disturbs me just in the last 10 days or so, I've seen evidence, maybe 2 weeks, I don't remember. I've seen Gerald Celente, for one, there's been another source before him, and I don't remember who it was, pointing out that China's in debt for $30 trillion. Right, their official debt is $30 trillion. Our official debt is $18 trillion. Our real debt is probably closer to $100 trillion, and including unfunded liabilities, it's over $200 trillion. But still, what bothers me about this is the news that China is, in fact, a debtor nation is disturbing to me, because up until just the last couple of weeks, I had assumed, and I don't think I'm alone in this, but China was a creditor nation. We heard that China had $1.2 trillion worth of U.S. bonds, and people, oh my gosh, how did they have that? Well, they were saving their money. They were creditor. They had a budgetary surplus. Turns out, no, they didn't. They actually had, what they had was a trade surplus. They were taking more in from trade than they were paying out, but in fact the government was still running in a major debt, and they were apparently trying to emulate the United States and the rest of the debt-based monetary system countries. And they said, we'll go into debt, everybody else going into debt, we're going into debt. That bothers me, because up until I understood that, and I don't believe I was the only one who was ignorant on this issue up until a couple of weeks ago, until I understood that, I thought that China had, as a creditor, they're buying allegedly 10,000 tons of gold. It is apparent that they are a creditor nation. They have surplus cash. They have surplus bonds. That's what everyone thought, so far as I was able to understand. And if that was true, then China could be the nation to create a renminbi that might be backed by gold. We might have a currency that was not debt-based coming out of China, and that would be a remarkable event, and maybe even something like, certainly a benefit, maybe a blessing. But now it turns out, no, they're as much in debt or more than the U.S. government is. Which means China does not have a vested interest in maintaining economic policies that are substantially different from those of the United States. They're as dedicated to going deeper into debt and using debt-based currency as the United States government is. where I had hoped at the Shanghai Gold Exchange. I thought, boy, once that thing gets fired up, they're going to raise the price of physical gold. But in fact, they haven't raised it, or if they have, it hasn't been much. All right? I thought the Shanghai Gold Exchange, well, they would, you know, they'd want, because China allegedly had 10,000 tons of gold, and therefore they'd want the price of gold to be higher. But if China is as in as much debt, relatively speaking, as the United States is, or comparative debt, they don't want the price of gold to go up. They want it to go down in order to support the value of their own phony baloney debt-based monetary system. So I'm not real pleased about what I'm hearing coming out of China, and it indicates that they're not an adversary to the economic policy of the United States, except insofar as we want that apple and they want the same apple, and now we can fight over the apple. But both of them believe in stealing other people's apples. That's what it comes down to. So,
well, I don't believe why anybody would think that China would be any different than any other country in this world. I mean, they are a communist country, and they're just as corrupt as everyone else. And I never thought that they would ever have a currency that would be backed by gold. But they did have it. Well, what makes China different with their gold policies is because they're a nation that believes in gold. They're citizens. They encourage gold purchases, just as India does. And I mean, this is in their culture. Gold is important to them. And as they continue to buy gold, and again, the numbers that were given and passed around as far as, you know, all these tons of gold, and so we don't know what they have and what they don't have. Do you really believe China would come out and admittedly share with the world what they're actually holding? I mean, certainly there's been a lot of estimates, and they've been high. And China is basically supposed to be reporting. They came out, at least I saw one report back in July, that they were supposed to be on a monthly basis showing what they're purchasing for gold. But even like Russia, I mean, they're all debt-based countries. They're all, but yet the interest in gold is there. And I believe this is what makes them strong, even though they have debt. I mean, here we're at a country that has debt, but yet they can't prove we have gold. You know, no, it's never been audited. I mean, it hasn't been audited for years. And that's the key difference. I mean, no one knows what anyone has. And that's the dangerous part of this whole world. It's just like all the numbers that are given, all the beliefs that are given, it's all phony. And you can take bits and pieces, you can take scraps of the information that's released, put together a scenario, and the scenario is not good. But, you know, I would have liked to have thought China was still perhaps a little bit, but we know they have a shadow banking system. We know that their whole system is corrupt. I mean, look at their ghost cities and their manufacturing and everything. I mean, how can you believe anything that China says?
Well, I'm not necessarily believing anything that China said, but there was a significant consensus, for example, that they'd acquired 10,000 tons of gold, maybe more. Some people speculated it was much more than that. Nobody knew. China came out 4 months ago, thereabouts, I don't know, five, and said, no, we've got 1,000 tons of gold.
I think they
I think they're concealing. Uh-huh. But regardless, my main point is that I am much surprised. I thought China was running a surplus, and as such, that weight, if they were a creditor nation, they should be pushing to do what's best for people who save their money. But it turns out, no, they're a debtor nation.
No, they want
people
to...
They're out to gut the people who save their money.
Absolutely.
Up the United States.
What makes them any different, Al? I mean, how could anybody believe they would be different?
Well, I believe they were different. A lot of people believe they were different. Nobody thought they were running the same as Washington, D.C. I didn't believe that, and I didn't hear of anyone who did.
Well,
I mean, what was the, you know, the gold
market? You didn't ask me, then.
$1.2 trillion. Well, they knew what you'd say if they asked, Melody.
I guess. But I mean, no, I mean, doesn't anybody understand the politics that are involved? I mean, what makes, and I agree with you. I mean, I don't think China is what anybody thought they were. They thought they were this country that was going to come in and right, like on a white horse and save the day in gold. No, but their interest is there. And you can't deny that fact.
Well, there's some interest everywhere, but there's some weird interest everywhere. But you know,
well,
who turns down gold if they have an opportunity?
And I do believe they probably have an interest in lower gold prices. Why? To buy more.
Well, I agree with that. But I thought that people have speculated that once China acquired, it was widely speculated and perhaps believed that China's 10,000 tons of gold was primarily coming out of the U.S. gold treasury. That we had been secretly, where did they were saying what gold they? It was believed they were acquiring 1,000-2,000 tons per year. And they said, where's this coming from? They couldn't explain it, and they said it has to be coming out of the U.S. gold treasury.
It's my understanding.
And they speculated that once China got the last of the gold from the United States, then China would jack the price of gold up dramatically higher. Well, now I'm not so sure that's true. If China is just as big a debtor as the United States, and they want in on this special drawing rights from the IMF, they want to be part of that, which is another fiat currency, you know.
China, as my understanding, has a lot of gold mines, so I don't think we really know exactly what they mine as far as their gold. So they probably do have a lot more gold than, you know, everyone thinks they...
Well, I think they have more than they admitted. I don't think they have
absolutely.
Thousands.
But I don't look to China for the hope of gold rising.
No, but I looked at it for resistance to what our government was doing and the naked short traders on Wall Street that were trading gold and driving prices lower when they didn't even have any gold.
Why would they turn down money?
Why would China?
Yeah.
Well, there's a point in time if China wants gold and the United States wants paper dollars, we have a natural conflict here. Right? There is a natural conflict between those who want gold and those who want paper. And presumably China wanted gold, and therefore there'd be and it turns out, wait a second, they also want debt, apparently, because they're allegedly $30 trillion in the hole.
Well, I'll tell
how are they
going
to pay that debt? They're another one now. But the one thing it does say is this. If China is in debt for $30 trillion and the United States is officially in debt for $18 trillion and probably in debt for $100 trillion, and Europe is undoubtedly in debt, and who else is left who's not in debt? Japan, they're in debt. They're deeply in debt. You take the top four economies in the world, United States, China, European Union, and Japan, top four are all in debt to a degree that they will never, ever be able to repay, then one of the conclusions is this. They're going to all come to a point and say, listen, why don't we cancel the debt? Now we don't even have anyone to resist that. China should have, if China was running a budgetary surplus, and a trade surplus, and they had savings. They don't want it. They don't want to destroy the debt because they are the creditor. People owe money to China. So we don't want to destroy the debt. We want to get paid. But if China is as indebted as the other three major economies, then the top four have a vested interest in canceling the debt, which is another way of saying if you're invested in paper debt instruments, the probability is that much higher that you're going to wish that wasn't the case. Keep holding on to your U.S. treasuries, your U.S. bonds, or any other kind of bonds, and there's a good chance you're going to be singing the blues.
Absolutely. The old saying, more money, more money, more money. How about more debt, more debt, more debt? It's the debt that's going to make the price of gold skyrocket. So as far as I'm concerned, go ahead, government. Go deeper and deeper into debt, because that's what's going to make gold go to 3,000, 5,000, and higher. And there's no turning around any of these countries, because they're all addicted to it. It's the only way their countries can be run. It's the only way their economies can run is through debt. So, hey, bring it on. Get that debt higher. higher that debt goes, the higher I see gold going. So, hey, you know, it's just a matter of time when it all comes together. We're going to break right now.
That's what I see, too. I've got a certain prophetic gift, and I could tell. See, I knew, Melody. I knew
but you just keep talking. But you just keep talking. Until Frank turns it up.
Job stress, financial obligations, or relationship problems have you feeling stressed out? When life is too much to handle, use Apothecary Herbs' emotional stress formula. Feel calm and more in control with herbs especially combined to provide the organic nutrition your system needs to help you cope. Complete instructions for maximum benefit and a money-back guarantee. You've waited long enough. Call Apothecary Herbs now. Toll free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. What's next, Melody?
DGScoins.com is the website that you folks need to visit. Make sure you sign up for a weekly newsletter, and these programs are archived on a daily basis, and we also have some long-term archives, too. We have all kinds of great specials going on with prices. We still have some of the AU $5 Liberty Gold pieces at $345. Make sure you call us on those. We can add a little bit of 90% to that. Silver Eagles are flowing, so no problem there on the silver product. We also have the 90% silver quarters. We have that available for you. And a lot of other products, you know, your typical bullion, and we also have the $20 gold pieces that are great buys right now. A tremendous opportunity to pick up some $20 gold pieces. So give us a call so we can quote them for you, 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Briefly, Al, Greece. you know, you think they're done and everything, and, you know, just gradually they're beginning to come back, and it's just another sign that things aren't ever fixed, folks, not when it comes to debt, until they actually eliminate it. Greece failed to convince the European creditors today to release vital bailout funds to shore up the country's public coffers, and it's crippled banks, but hopes are high that a deal will be concluded within a week, even though the government has met most of the conditions that was attached to this third international bailout. It still has to push through some financial reforms, notably how to deal with those in arrears on their mortgages and the bad loans, excuse me, held by banks. That's the problem.
Well, I think the solution, I think the banks want to shoot them.
Maybe.
The creditors are saying, we need to shoot those people who are in arrears. And the people in arrears say, no, you don't shoot us. You know, shoot someone else. But the whole idea is nobody wants to deal with the truth of the matter, which is that the Greeks are broke and bankrupt.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right? And they can't pay their bills, so why try? You know, it's the old thing, you can't get blood out of a stone. You can't get blood out of a turnip. Squeeze it as hard as you want. That's what they're trying to do. They're trying to squeeze blood out of Greek stones. It's not going to happen. They're not going to get the money out of these people. And everybody'd be better off if they just said, look, we're broke, we can't pay it off, we're filing for bankruptcy, that's it, we're out of here. All right? That's what Iceland did, and they said, oh, the world will come to an end. Didn't come to an end. Iceland had a difficult 18, 24 months, and they're back on the books. They're good.
Well, you know, there's been 10 billion euros that was already set aside for the country's banks. And, you know, they have a lot of capital controls, meaning people are still limited on the amount of money that they can get from their bank accounts and so forth. And what's funny is this article says they're ready for another likely recession. Really? I figure that country's been in a recession
since day
one.
We're ready for another for another likely recession here in the United States too.
Yeah.
Assuming we ever get out of the last one, we're ready for another one.
And
you know, it's just so much.
It is.
BS, BS, BS. It would be so refreshing if the people in positions of power would simply tell the truth. I mean, that's one of the attractive qualities of Trump. I think Trump will tell us the truth. He just said, hey, screw y'all. I'm going to tell you the truth whether you like it or you don't like it. Trump might do that, and a lot of people might, yay. Somebody's treating us as if we were adults, you know, telling us the truth. You know, they've got this idea. It's the old movie of, what is it? A Few Good Men, maybe? I don't remember if that was the name of it. Tom Cruise and Jack Nicklaus.
Can't handle the truth.
Yeah, Jack Nicklaus is the Marine colonel. The truth, you can't handle the truth. Yeah, I think maybe we can. It's the lies that we are all having a problem with. Even though they're pleasant and they're reassuring, we all know where they're going to lead us. All right? Everybody knows. Come on. Tell me lies. Tell me lies. Tell me sweet, sweet lies. And guess what that means? It means somebody's going to get screwed. You understand? And insofar as we will welcome the lies and they supply the lies, somebody's going to get screwed, and I'm willing to bet you it's not going to be the people who are telling the lies, at least not initially. Before it's done, maybe we all get screwed on the deal. But somebody tell the truth. Will somebody please just tell the truth?
I stayed up Saturday night to watch Trump on Saturday Night Live.
Yeah.
He was kind of funny. There was two funny parts as they were in the Oval Office and the president from Mexico comes and hands him a check. He said, here's a check for your fence. That was kind of funny. And he had a couple of little skits that were funny. But I'll tell you what, the other parts where Trump was not on the program was so vulgar. I was shocked. I wasn't shocked because that's just pretty much the main, you know, it's just pretty much what it is anymore, any program. But yet, it's still shocking because, you know, I don't watch those types of programs. And then when you see and hear what is said, I just couldn't believe how vulgar it was. And it wasn't vulgar when Trump was on. That area was all cleaned up, but the little skits in between that he didn't participate in, it was I was surprised that it had been, you know, that far gone. And they had this, and I know this is important to economics and so forth, but even the taste of music. There was a girl on there singing, I don't know what her name was. She had this wig on, it was half black, half white, and it was down to her nose to where she couldn't see. So when she sang, all you could see was her lips. And then there was this person that had the same type of wig, but you could see her eyes. She was Chinese or Japanese or something, not that it makes any difference. And she's rolling around on the ground, I guess, interpreting the song. And it's like, are you kidding me? I mean, I must either be getting old, Al, or the world truly is insane.
Well,
probably both.
Yeah, there's the answer, Melody. We finally got one where I got both.
Both.
Yeah.
But anyway, so you didn't miss anything on Saturday Night Live if you didn't stay up and watch it. But
you know, we did. I saw an excerpt from it. I didn't see the program. I just saw the excerpt, and Trump is standing there with two Trump impersonators, and they're doing their little number, and Larry someone, I can't think of his
name. Yeah.
He stands up and he says, export racism or deport racism or something like that. And he said, what do you think? Well, they said they'd give me $5,000. You and I were talking last Friday.
Right.
And what I was wondering, and if Trump himself would say deport racism and then insist that the whoever came up with the idea send him $5,000. I thought that would have been hilarious. Didn't happen, but it would have amused me, Melody. And I'm not really, and you know,
you do enjoy amusing yourself.
I don't enjoy amusing myself, Melody. I enjoy
anyway.
A little bit of humor, bring a little humor to some of these things, helping people to see the funny spot, which is located right next to the tragic spot sometimes. You know, you got tragedy and comedy. Well, right. That's where we wind up. A lot of times you wind up doing comedy in order to avoid the tragedy.
Here's a comedy. David Cameron out of Britain. Now, this is something that there's going to be a referendum at the end of 2017. Okay, this is 2017. And he's coming out, and he made the statement today that he is deadly serious about leaving the European Union if he doesn't get his way. And the United Kingdom government is going to publish a list of demands for negotiation with the other EU nations tomorrow. And he's saying that he wants to impress upon the other countries that it is a real possibility that Britain would leave the European Union. But he has till 2017 when that referendum is due. And he hasn't really come out and said anything for his goals. They've all been short on detail. And but this comes on the tails also of Britain making all those agreements with China, that Britain is now China's best partner in the West and so forth. And so I found that to be interesting that, hey, maybe Britain will be leaving the European Union.
Yeah, maybe Greece will be leaving the European Union. Mm-hmm. Maybe Spain will be leaving, and Portugal, or at least if they're not leaving, breaking up into chunks. I mean, Spain may break up into two or three pieces.
Yeah, I saw where that was basically approved today. I think that was approved for Spain.
I don't know that it's been approved, but the pressure is there. I don't know. I'm just telling
there
you.
I saw a brief comment earlier today, and I didn't read the whole article, but there is something going on with that. But what's interesting is, to me, I think, is also the time frame. We have our budget that's been renewed for 2 years, and it just seems like everything is kind of two years. Not to say that something can't happen prior to, which I think is will, which will lead up to all these comments and projections for 2 years. So, I don't know. Coincidence? Possibly. But also in the German authorities for Volkswagen, they're going to need to make more than just software changes to nearly a quarter of its 2.4 million diesel cars that are being recalled in the country. They're expecting about 540,000 will also need hardware changes, and they're going to notify the owners of the details. And I even heard that Volkswagen is going to send out these owners a bank card or a credit card for $1,000 as an apology and so forth, because they misrepresented these people by these automobiles, thinking that, you know, their footprint is going to be somewhat eliminated, but yet they have a problem with their emissions. So the U.S. officials said that Volkswagen had programmed diesel engines on 482,000 cars to disable their emissions controls when the vehicles were not being tested. Some 11 million vehicles worldwide are fitted with the software. And
this is an interesting thing, but it's not just an embarrassment.
It's going to kill Germany. Yeah, it hurts.
It could destroy Volkswagen.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, they're trying to hand out free $1,000. You know, here's a spend, take a little gift card for $1,000. Well, that's very nice, but what if instead of taking the $1,000 gift card, people sit back and say, "Where's my lawyer? Sue these guys. I'm going to need $100,000 out of them." There are enough potential lawsuits, because this is clearly fraud. I don't see where Volkswagen has any defense against this. If people sue them, the lawsuits could be sufficient to destroy Volkswagen. They could put them out of business. And what they're trying to do, I will bet you that if they hand you the $1,000 gift card, it's in the fine print, it's in the bold print, it's in the print relative to the gift card. By accepting this $1,000, you agree that you're not going to sue Volkswagen.
Mm-hmm.
This settles. This is Volkswagen's total liability to you. All right, and that's what they're trying to do. They're trying to make out of court settlements with all of these people for $1,000 a piece, and that tells you. I mean, this isn't just people trying to play nice. This is people trying to buy off potential lawsuits, and if they're willing to pay $1,000 a piece to several, 100,000 car owners, you're talking about a bunch of money.
2.4.
And not only that, they're thinking that this is the way to get off cheap. They realize that the actual lawsuit liability here is far beyond $1,000 per person. Even that, I don't know. What did they say? Did they say they had 400,000, 450,000 of those vehicles and then false?
Well, there's both hardware and software involved. And you have some 11 million vehicles worldwide that are fitted with the software. And then you have 2.4 million, I believe, with the diesel cars that are being recalled. So, you know, it's, you know.
11 million.
And we're
just handing out 11 million $1,000 gift cards. You're talking about something like, $100 billion? I don't know if I'm doing that.
I don't know if it's going to everybody.
Well, listen, I tell you what. If they're sending you a $1,000 gift card and they're not sending one to me, and I've got one of those Volkswagens, meet my lawyer. You understand? There's going to be a lawsuit. I mean, if you're not even going to try to bribe me, I will take that as a terrible insult. They're not even offering me a $1,000 bribe, Melody. I mean, I've never been so humiliated in my life. I'll have to sue them for the humiliation of not trying to bribe me.
Well, speaking of recalls and so forth, I saw, too, where court today will allow the General Motors problem. That they're allowed to sue for punitive damages.
Ooh, I don't understand what problem you're talking about.
Well, remember the little part that was on the General Motors vehicles that they lied about, the switch, and they had hired an attorney, and they were going to settle those claims, I think, at $1 million or something like that apiece, but that didn't include any punitive damages. And I saw now that they got a ruling that these people can sue General Motors for punitive damages. So,
well, there's another one. I mean, this is the sort of thing. This is ruinous. I mean, potentially ruinous. I don't know how much exposure. I can't imagine the General Motors. Well, I don't know. I think the million-dollar settlements, I think, were for people who died or were injured when vehicles
now they can come back and do
burst into flame or whatever happened.
Yeah, right.
But, all right, they're buying them off. There couldn't have been that many. There might have been a couple hundred people.
Punitive damages?
They might have changed the switch on a million cars.
Yeah, but
there were only a couple hundred people who actually died in the situation. The losses, $1 million apiece, it's a problem, but it's not...
But punitive damages could be any number.
That's another story completely.
Yeah, exactly.
And now we're going to see, I don't know, we're going to be back to riding rickshaws.
What do you think the jury...
They know how to make rickshaws over there.
What do you think the jury will think? Because here's GM, a major multinational corporation that was bailed out by the U.S. government when, you know, the majority of people think they should have failed. And now they're sitting on a jury to decide... the amount of money that should be given to the people that died, because the GM elite in there, the executives, covered up a story of a faulty part just to make more money, and yet they still failed. So I can't imagine that those punitive damages would, unless they can limit them somehow, I think they would be significantly high.
Oh, they're going to be, because GM has already admitted by paying $1 million per every person who got hurt, they've already admitted they're guilty. So if there's punitive damages, the only question is how much.
And it's going to be high if the jury has anything to say about it because of those reasons I just mentioned.
Perhaps
and there's,
so.
There's another
Aha.
reason.
See, now you got caught by the music.
Yep,
see?
I stop.
Aha. No, you didn't. You're still talking. All right, we'll take a break for some more commercials and be back in a moment on Financial Survival. Please stay tuned.
Make the aspirin mistake. Aspirin was discovered by mistake during World War II and suppresses your immune system and prevents blood clotting. Don't expose your body to risk when you can use a natural inflammation and pain reliever called Extra Strength Pain Relief by Apothecary Herbs. Discover the power this formula has with salicin to enter the system in 60 seconds to work hard and relieve pain for 12 hours. Whether it's arthritis, sports injury, or flu, you can relieve aches, pain, and swelling with our Extra Strength Pain Relief formula. Call Apothecary Herbs now, toll-free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at thepowerherbs.com.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, and the program is brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. And here's an article from The Street. And the headline is U.S. Federal Reserve is failing as world's central bank. There's a power vacuum in international monetary policy leadership in the U.S. with an inactive Federal Reserve isn't doing anything to fill it. cash then might become yet more attractive to investors and portfolio managers. What does that mean if cash is becoming more attractive? It means deflation. Right? That's what it means. If it's becoming more attractive, it's because it's becoming more valuable, and they are talking indirectly, and they're saying, look, cash might become more attractive, because, and they're blaming because the Federal Reserve has been inactive. He says that's the message coming from Mohamed El-Erian, the chief economic advisor to Alliance and chair of President Obama's Global Development Council. Yesterday, Orion's opinion piece in the Financial Times titled Divergence by Central Banks Makes Cash an Attractive Prospect underscored his running theme, namely that countries' monetary policies are closely intertwined and there is a vacuum in leadership. This is a gap that the U.S. could fill but has not. All right. What he's arguing here is that all of the countries of the world are now so intertwined that what one country does affects another country. You can't have an economic policy in the United States that doesn't affect Germany. And Germany can't have an economic policy that ultimately doesn't affect the United States. And El-Erian writes, persistent policy divergence will be hard to maintain given the interconnectedness of international financial markets. He's saying he's concerned about persistent policy divergence. He's saying, oh my gosh, it's a policy, it's a problem that Germany has one economic policy and the U.S. has another economic policy and Japan has another one and China has a fourth. And he's arguing, in a sense, for a new world order. He's arguing for a single monetary system, a single system that puts us all on, we're all going to go into inflation at the same time, or we're all going into deflation at the same time, and the inflation rate is the same and globally, and someone is in a position to control that. And he's saying that's not happened. And he's concerned that the persistent policy divergence that now seems to exist in the world will not be maintainable, saying if we have too many people pulling in too many different directions, it's going to pull the whole thing apart. And he says this leaves the United States in a dilemma because of the limits to U.S. willingness to allow its currency to carry the burden of the adjustment process. Now, I agree with him that the United States has been carrying the burden of the adjustment process, but he doesn't spell out what that burden is. And we've talked about it on the program. We have a teeter-totter relationship with other nations. For example, particularly with the U.S. dollar index, we've got six foreign countries sitting on one end of the teeter-totter and the United States sitting on the other end. Those foreign countries, I don't know if I can name them all, Japan, the European Union, Great Britain, yeah, I said Japan already, Swiss and Swedish, if I recall correctly, their currencies sit on one end of the teeter-totter. If they all have or need or are desperately dependent upon inflation, right? When their currencies inflate, the dollar has to deflate. We're on the other end of the currency teeter-totter. And when he talks about the U.S. government and the U.S. currency carrying the burden of the adjustment process, I believe what he's saying is, look, the Europeans got to have inflation to try to stimulate their economy out of a depression, and they are begging the United States to go along and continue to allow U.S. deflation. That's contrary to the government's interests. Deflation is contrary to the interests of every debtor. It's great for creditors, but it's terrible for debtors. We've mentioned the same thing every time I talk about it. We have, if you've ever bought a house, someone has encouraged you to buy. They said you'll be able to pay off your mortgage with cheaper dollars. All right? That's because they anticipated inflation. Inflation lets you pay off your debt with cheaper dollars. Deflation does exactly the opposite. Inflation helps us. Oh, I can afford a mortgage for $300,000 or $500,000 or whatever. I wouldn't normally do that, but I can do it because inflation will let me pay off my debt with cheaper dollars. I can go deeper into debt if I know there's going to be inflation. When there's deflation, you can't go deeper into debt. You can't pay the existing debt. More people go into bankruptcy, and the biggest debtor in the world is the government of the United States. Deflation is potentially lethal to the government of the United States. We are assuming the burden of that deflation. We're allowing deflation to happen in this country in apparently as an accommodation to the nation, other nations of the world. And this is what I think El Arian is touching on when he talks the burden of the adjustment process is being borne by the United States. Yeah, these other countries, they're inflating. We're deflating. Right? Deflation is bad. It's a characteristic of economic depression. If we continue to go into deflation, we are going to see some. So we are not going to avoid an economic collapse, at least in this country. Now, someone is betting that we can endure a little more deflation, or maybe we've got to bite the bullet for the sake of the global economy or the New World Order. But I'm just saying, look, I don't think it can be sustained. This government needs inflation in order to go deeper into debt. And if they don't get inflation, they're going to be paying off that massive U.S. debt with more valuable dollars, which will effectively increase the size of the debt. Even though the nominal size stays the same, the purchasing power will increase. It'll be a problem that will push the government closer to overt insolvency. And perhaps a declaration of bankruptcy. So, El Arian continues and says, either the Fed will have to reverse course as the U.S. economy is pressured by persistent weakness in Europe and emerging world, meaning, and the course is, we're going to accept deflation to allow Europe to inflate so they can boost their economy and we'll sink ours, or at least a little bit. They either have to reverse course and stop that and say, to heck with it. We're not having any more deflation. To heck with all of you. You have your problem. We got ours. We're going back. We're going to make inflation happen in this country. That would be the reversal of course, in my opinion. Or, according to El Arian, a more comprehensive policy response out of Europe reinvigorates growth there, enabling the European Central Bank to start its own policy normalization process. That is just wishful thinking. The European Union is impotent to solve its own economic problems. They are not going to have a new, more comprehensive policy response out of Europe. That's not happening, which means if we've got an either-or situation, and one of them is a comprehensive policy response, change in policy out of Europe, that's not going to happen, in my opinion. If El Arian's right, then the Fed has to reverse course. We've got to see an end to the deflation. We've got to see somebody's got to pull out the stops and say, we're going to make inflation happen no matter what. We're not going to tolerate being pushed deeper into deflation by European and other countries sitting on that teeter-totter, and they get inflation, we get deflation. If we get inflation, they get deflation. All right? It's an adversarial relationship. But should we sacrifice ourselves to support them? Or should we just say, to heck with it? You guys got a problem? Too bad for you. We're going to take care of number one. I don't know what's going to happen here, but my argument for several years has been that the government can't deal with deflation. And if they allow it to persist, it will take the government down because it's the biggest debtor in the world. So what does that prove? Doesn't prove anything right now. It proves that we have two choices in front of us. Either the government's going to risk insolvency and a kind of national destruction, and certainly national depression, or the government's going to go back to inflation and perhaps even hyperinflation in order to try to get out of the debt hole that they've dug for themselves. So which is it going to be, Melody? What do you think? Are we going into a depression or are we going into inflation and or hyperinflation?
Well, I think in the future we're actually going to get both. But right now it's inflation because that's what they need. That's what we're going to have. And the people out there who purchase things that, you know, for healthcare to live, things are higher. We do have
some things are higher.
No, Lots of things are higher. Maybe TVs are cheaper. Gasoline is the only thing that has really have gone down. And that couple bucks that they save, you know, once a week or once a month or every other week or whatever is certainly not enough to compensate for everything else that is going up, you know, by bigger amounts.
I mean, healthcare.
You look at healthcare. Everything that you buy.
Oh, healthcare is going up. Yeah, I get
healthcare. Energy costs.
Energy costs aren't going
to heat. Well, you know what? Let's ask the people when they fill their oil tanks for the winter. Let's see if the prices really have dropped, you know, significantly. They really haven't, not to the degree that, you know, the oil prices have actually fallen. You know, there's a lot of things out there. Everything
down in direct proportion, but nevertheless,
you look at clothing.
Continues to scream that they can't get inflation up 2%.
Yeah.
Their target rate, they can't seem to achieve that. They're running less than 1%, if you can believe.
Yeah, and they're the same ones that tell us that we have an employment rate of 5%. They're lying.
Well, sometimes
they're lying.
Like
just like when they tell us that
it tells the truth twice a day.
Just like they tell us the GDP.
It tells the truth once in a while.
Just like the GDP is, we're doing great. You know, just like the world is doing great. They're lying. They adjust all the numbers to make it to whatever they need. And that's the problem.
Well, that's one of the big problems, but it doesn't mean they lie every single time. Once in a while, just to keep in practice, they might try telling the truth. Now, I know it's not likely to happen very often, but still it could happen. As a sort of thing, you know, it's like studying Latin or Greek or French or something like that. You know?
Someone was telling me yesterday, they go to Walmart. They're shocked at the prices that are being seen at Walmart, how much they're rising. It's like, yeah, China has inflation. They're exporting their inflation back to us. That's what we did for so many years. We exported our inflation, you know, all the jobs and everything was going overseas, so our prices were lower and so forth. Now they're sending it back because their inflation is higher. So, I mean, we're in a world of inflation. There isn't anything that's going to go down. The money is out there. You know, when I see football stadiums that are half empty, then you can tell me we're deflationary. But when people are still out there paying, you know, $100 a pop for tickets and $20 for a hot dog and a beer, it's just the money is out there. So I get that with the dollar strength. We've seen it. We're almost at 100. Yeah, that's deflation. That is. Our dollar is getting stronger. And you're right, Al. It really is killing the government. It's killing the multinational corporations, which are the government anymore. You know, they're getting creamed. And so, and it will reverse itself and blah, blah, blah. So that's how I feel about it. Inflation and people out there that are doing jobs for things. I hear people tell me all the time, Melody, I'm working harder than I've ever worked before. I have more business than I've had before. But yet I'm making less money. And a lot of that is taxes. A lot of that, you know, everything is so competitive out there. So I would have to think to that degree we'd be seeing a little bit of deflation there because everything is so competitive. You know, people are doing things at very low prices. Plus you have a lot of people out of jobs. So they're out there going out on their own, doing little odds and ends, getting into landscaping, getting into, you know, being a plumber and all this kind of stuff or house repairs and so forth. So there's a lot of competition there.
Bank robbery was popular during our last deflationary episode. That was the Great Depression. We had Bonnie and Clyde.
Well, look at our crime. Look at our crime rates. Our crime rate.
I'll tell you what, but where we are, folks, is we're going to have to resume this discussion at a later date. Maybe tomorrow or maybe the day after. Tomorrow, Greg Hunter will be on the program. Melody and I will be back with Greg Hunter tomorrow on Financial Survival. Thanks for listening today. Hope you'll tune in tomorrow. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank, the producer. Bye.
All night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? there never seems to be a single penny left for me.
Bless you, bless you.